This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Faithless in Death by J.D. Robb. Narrated for you by Susan Erickson. Their breath is agitation, and their life a storm whereon they ride. Lord Byron. In time we hate that which we often fear. William Shakespeare. 1. Paperwork could kill. Nothing, to Eve Dallas's mind, reached the same heights or depths as paperwork's terminal boredom. And if the boredom didn't kill you, the frustration would. She had to survive it. As NYPSD's Homicide Division's lieutenant, she had to survive it. But it seemed desperately clear to her, as she sat at her desk in her tiny office in Cop Central, that by spring of 2061, somebody sure as hell should have found a cure. Didn't she deserve that when she'd come in early and full of righteousness to tackle it? She'd known it would be thornier than usual, but even so, she'd underestimated. It wasn't every day she ended up taking her whole damn squad in pursuit of a contract killer. On two continents. Wouldn't have happened, she thought as she struggled with numbers, a lot of numbers, if said contract killer hadn't put a target on her husband's back. And hers. Since he had, the men and women who served under her, along with the chunk of cops from EDD and her commander, had stood up, stepped up, and had refused to back down. Maybe Rourke had ordered the shuttle for the flight from New York, so she didn't have to figure out how to add that terrifying expense into her budget, into her report. Because she'd married a stubborn Irishman and a filthy rich one. And sure, the takedown happened on his family's farm in Clare, with his aunt and the rest of them capping it off with enough food for an army. So, no chits for meals. But the overtime. Pre-approved by Commander Whitney, yes, but Christ on a spreadsheet, the OT boggled. Then she had the regs to meet for payment due on international investigations. Paperwork could not only kill, she thought as she gulped coffee. It could kill slowly and painfully. Once, as she worked, her partner, Detective Peabody, clumped down the hall to Eve's office in her pink cowgirl boots and poked her cheery self into the room. One snarl had her clomping away again. And 87 minutes after she'd sat down at her desk, Eve finished. Every chit, every hour, every approved expense accounted for. She submitted it, and woe be-fucking-tide any flat-nose in accounting who questioned her. Then she laid her head on the desk, closed her glassy eyes a moment. No more numbers, she muttered. In the name of humanity, no more numbers. She sat up, rubbed her hands over her angular face, then back through her choppy crop of brown hair. Rising, she walked to her auto chef because she damn well deserved another hit of coffee. As she drank it, she stood at her skinny window looking out at her view of New York. A tall, lanky woman, she wore good boots, smoke gray like her trousers, and the vest over her white t-shirt and weapon harness. While her wedding ring was her only visible jewelry, She wore a fat diamond on a chain under her shirt. Both pieces Rourke had given her held equal fat slices of sentiment. She watched the air trams wind through a blue sky. The weather gods offered the city a perfect day in May, sunny in 70s. The poor bastards heading to their cubes inside one of the steel towers might not drink in much of it, but it was still there. And since she'd survived death by expense report, she could appreciate it. A good day, she thought, and tugged her window open a couple of inches. With the kicky little breeze flowing in, she went back to her desk to see what else had piled up since her last shift. Her communicator signaled. She saw dispatch on the readout. Dallas. Dispatch, Dallas, Lieutenant Eve. Possible homicide. See the officers. As she listened to the particulars, she grabbed her jacket off the back of her desk chair and headed out to the bullpen to get her partner. Somebody hadn't had such a perfect day in May. Acknowledged. Dallas and Peabody, Detective Delia en route. Peabody, she said, still moving. We caught one. Her stride hitched briefly as she blinked at Jenkinson's tie. She should be used to the detective's insane ties by now, she thought. But who got used to fat, bug-eyed yellow bumblebees buzzing over a neon orange field? Nobody did. Nobody ever should. Peabody grabbed her coat and hustled to catch up. She wore curls today, her dark hair red-streaked and bouncy. Something else Eve couldn't get used to. What have we got? Dead body, West 4th. Two uniforms on scene. Interestingly, the 911 came in from the Upper East Side. Two more uniforms being dispatched to that location to speak to the woman who called it in. How does somebody on the Upper East Side know somebody's dead in the West Village? Peabody pondered it while Eve made a heel turn away from the elevator, already crowded with cops, techs, civilian support heading down. They took the glides. Dispatch didn't have that data. You got in early today. Paperwork. Done. Don't want to talk about it. McNabb and I left early enough to walk in. You've got to take advantage of a day like this. Because, like the DB on West 4th found out, it could be your last. Hoping for the best, Eve jumped off the glides to try an elevator. Since she found it only about half as full as the one on homicide's level, she squeezed in. Mostly, we thought it was a really nice morning for a walk. They squeezed off again on the garage level. Their footsteps echoed as they crossed to Eve's car. We walk a lot when we're in the field, Peabody continued as they got in the car. But it's not the same as, you know, sort of strolling along New York in the spring. I mean, it's just mag. Eve pulled out into the insane traffic, the cacophony of angry horns, the bellowing ad blimps, and the farting maxi buses that was New York in the spring. But what the hell? On Eve's scale, it was mag, any time of the year. And hey, Mavis, Bella, and I spent two amazing hours in the community gardens the other day. We've got a nice plot going. Eve thought of Mavis, her oldest friend, the performer, the mother, the crazed fashion plate, the pregnant again Mavis. She could see Mavis doing a lot of things, strange things, but digging in the dirt didn't make the list. She's really doing that? She's good at it, Peabody confirmed. Good hands, good eye. I grew up farming. That's the free-ager way, but she's a natural. And Bella's so cute in her little gardening outfits. Oh, and she has a boyfriend. Mavis has... A what? She's married. Knocked up again and married. No, Bella has a boyfriend. His name's Ned. He's 22 months. He's got all this curly red hair, all these freckles. Mavis dubbed him Adorabilicious, and she nailed it. They're really cute together. His parents, Jem and Link, are just learning how to garden. Jem's a blogger and Link's a biochemist. Is this gardening or a social club? It can be both. That's the beauty. She turned her head to grin at Eve. You'd hate it. No question of that, Eve thought as she hunted for parking. But still, I planted a tree. You did what? Peabody's dark eyes widened like inflated balloons. What? Rourke and I planted a tree. His idea, but we did it. Mostly. The landscaper guy dug the hole, but we put the tree in, and then dirt and whatever. What kind of tree? There. Spotting a space, Eve hit the lights, hit vertical, and as Peabody slammed her goggling eyes shut, punched it across the street. She dropped down between a scarred mini and a burly all-terrain with maybe a half an inch to spare. Score. I was going to say you should warn me, but it would probably be worse. Happy to be unscathed, Peabody got out, waited for Eve to get their field kits from the trunk. What kind of tree? Eve pointed south to the crosswalk. A crying tree. A crying something. Peach, maybe? A weeping peach? Weeping, crying, same thing, even though it doesn't do either. It's got little flowers all over it now, so we didn't kill it. That's good, but why did you plant a tree? Why do a cop and a gazillionaire plant a tree? Rourke gets sentimental, she thought, as they joined the river of people crossing the street. Ideas. We did that pond thing, so... You did it? It's done? You said he was going to put one in. Yeah, it's done. It's nice. It's got those things that float on it. Lily pads? Peabody sighed. Those, and like a stone sort of skirt, and plants, and a bench. And he decided we should plant the tree ourselves.
Oh.
Social clubs closed, Eve announced, and paused in front of the four-story building to get a sense. Street level consisted of a place called Poets and Painters and a shop called Herbalists. Both had wide windows facing the street, as did the upper stories. No privacy screens, she noted. No security bars, just glass. She walked to the wine-colored door between the two businesses that accessed the units. No security camera, standard locks. You could break in with a toothpick, she decided, and mastered in. Iron steps led straight up to the second floor, where a door on the right had a decent alarm system, and the double doors on the left had solid locks. DB's upstairs, she told Peabody. They went up, boots clattering. A uniform waited in the open doorway on the right. The double doors on the left stood open. At a glance, Eve saw easels, stools, work tables, tools, big and small hunks of stone and wood. She heard music pouring out of the room behind the uniform. She held up her badge, turned on a recorder. Lieutenant. The uniform, female, about 50, her short, densely curled hair tidy under her cap, stepped back. Officer Miller, my partner, Officer Getz, is upstairs with the DB. Run it through. We just completed taking a complaint up the block. We're going off shift when the call came in. 0833 hours. Half a block away. You gotta take it. No response at either unit on this level. and we could hear the music through the door. Hot-tempered music, Eve thought. A lot of bass, a lot of angry drums. No soundproofing, the uniform continued. We woke the tenant downstairs in case she had access, which she did. Hetty Brownstone. She and the DB are the only tenants, other than the commercial on the street, neither of which were opened at the time we arrived. Ms. Brownstone gave us her key cards to both units, rented and occupied by Ariel Bird, and complied when we asked her to wait in her apartment. We announced ourselves, entered. My partner took the second level while I cleared this one. He found the DB. Miller shifted to glance toward the stairs. Through the wide cased opening, Eve saw the other cop standing at parade rest, the wide window at his back, some shelving flanking it. It's an artist's studio, sir, like for sculpting. The back of her head's caved in. A good-sized hammer, like a mallet, is on the floor beside her and has blood and gray matter on it, visibly. Also a takeout bag from Café Delish. That's about a block east, on the floor at the top of the stairs. Like somebody dropped it, and the fancy coffee splatted good. Two muffins inside the bag. We secured the scene, called it in. I went down to inform Ms. Brownstone and conduct the initial interview. Miller glanced down at the notes in her hand. She's known the victim for 3 years since the Vic moved in. She runs a dance studio on the premises, directly across from her apartment. According to her statement, she concluded her last class at 9, locked up. She has a 5-year-old kid. She didn't leave the premises, didn't hear or see anyone. She states she put the kid to bed by 9:15, took a shower, and had a glass of wine while she watched some screen until about 10:30. Miller looked up from her notes. She was upset, Lieutenant, but cooperative. She stated she would speak to the investigating officers when they arrived, but had to get her kid to school. She would be back by 9. All right. We've got the scene. I'm going to send your partner down. I want you to check with the Poet place. They'd have been open last night, and there's cams on their door and the Herb place. I want to see the feed from both. Yes, sir, Lieutenant. See what you can find out from the cafe, and check on Brownstone when she gets back. Inform her one or both of us will come down to speak with her as soon as possible. Yes, sir. Sir, I want to add, when I cleared this level, I noticed the bed, unless the victim wasn't in the habit of making it, had been used. I think used, as there are wine glasses on either bedside table, and a nearly empty bottle of Shiraz on a counter in the kitchen area. Good to know. Thank you, officer. Eve walked to the stairs. Not iron here, but wood. Old, maybe original. The male uniform, maybe 15 years his partner's junior, met them at the top. To his right on the floor, the soaked takeout bag lay in a pool of creamy brown liquid. Lieutenant, Miller said not to turn the music off. You'd want to keep everything, even that, the way it was when we accessed. Correct. I wouldn't have heard you coming up. I only knew you were here because I looked down and saw you with Miller. Not ear-blasting loud, Eve thought, but loud enough to mask footsteps. Thank you, officer. We've got the scene. Standing where she was, studying that scene, Eve opened her field kit. She sealed her hands, her boots, as Peabody did. Music off. In the silence, she looked at the victim. A small-statured female, in sweatpants cut off at the knees, a sweatshirt cut off at the armpits. Blood matted her hair, short, ink black with streaks of bright blue. From the position of the wound, it looks like it hit slightly to the right, and she went down to the left. Came up behind her, that's clear enough, Eve commented. She's standing there at that work table, facing it, the window, working on that hunk of stone. It's marble, I think. Okay. She's got tools right there. A chisel, a hammer. There's bits of stone on the table, on the floor. Got the music going, the lights on. It'd be hard to see her from the street because the work table's too far back. But she can see out if she wants. No sign of struggle. The coffee sack. Peabody frowned at it. Somebody starts up, most likely the 911 caller, right? Sees the body, drops the bag, splat. That's how it looks. No obvious signs of burglary or theft up here either. A lot of statues, finished, half-finished. A lot of stone and wood and tools. The killer comes in. We'll take a good look at the door for tampering. Comes up the steps. Picks up that mallet. Plenty of that sort of thing right there on that other bench. Wham! She held up a finger, circled the body. Or, possibly, she's had some wine and sex with someone, and he comes up with her. They argue, or started to argue, downstairs. She's done, calls for the music, picks up her tools. And in that moment, when people just lose their fucking minds, he grabs the mallet and crushes her skull. Probably bashes her a couple times. Then it's, oh, shit. Or, she deserved it. And he gets the hell out. Her neighbor might know if she was seeing anyone. Yeah, we'll check on that. With her field kit, Eve crouched down, doing what she could to avoid the pool of blood. Using her identipad to confirm ID, she read it into the record. Victim is officially identified as Ariel Bird of this address. Mixed race female, age 27. I've got the body, Peabody. Start downstairs. Start with a bedroom. Let's see if we can lift some prints or DNA off the wine glasses. She didn't need the micro goggles to examine the wound. At least two blows from the shape, the width. And since the killer left the weapon right here, easily identified. Bagging for evidence. She bagged it, sealed it, labeled it, set it aside. Vic's wearing work gloves and boots and protective goggles. Eve leaned in, angled her head to look through the goggles to the dark eyes, filmed now, that stared back at her. Then took out her gauges to confirm time of death. TOD, 2248. COD, blunt force trauma to the back of the skull. ME to confirm. Since the victim was about 5'3 and maybe 100 pounds, Eve didn't call Peabody to help her turn the body. Yeah, she tipped to the left. Damage to right cheekbone where it slammed against the floor. Hard fall. She lifted the sweatshirt. Rammed the table first. Bet we've got a broken rib here. Couple of strong, hard blows from behind. The victim slams forward, but this table's bolted down so it doesn't move. Then she goes down to the left. I'm saying that's when the killer follows up with the next hit, and that turns her head so she hits the floor with the right side of her face. She's dead before she hits the floor. Eve duck-walked back, mindful of the blood. She straightened, took out her link to call for a wagon and the sweepers. Crouching again, she examined the takeout bag, used a finger to press on one of the muffins. Still fresh, she noted. So from this morning. She flagged the bag and contents for the sweepers. She took a tour around the space, a dedicated workspace. Tools, tarps, a mini auto chef, and a tiny fridgie that held water and a couple of energy drinks. An easel stood in the corner holding a series of sketches. The wood, of course. The stone. Some pieces seemed finished to her, and some delicate, some chunky and rough. Faces in the stone. A nude woman, a nude man, a couple of indeterminate sex caught in an embrace. And in wood, a dragon curled as if in sleep. A woman standing on point, a many-branched tree with a hint of a face in the trunk. Most likely, Eve considered, she'd had some success. She wasn't an expert on art, but the pieces had something that clicked with her. Either success, she thought as she started downstairs, or somebody backing her financially. Rent in a space like this in the West Village wouldn't come cheap. She scanned the living area. No sign of any disturbance. A wall screen and a sofa that looked comfortably saggy, covered in dark pink, bright blue, deep green stripes. A big, thick rug, probably in deference to her downstairs neighbor, covered most of the floor. An eating area defined by a square table in that same deep pink, four chairs, two in the blue and two in the green. Flowers in a stone, marble, vase. The flowers looked very fresh. No clutter, she thought, unless you counted the art crammed on the walls. All kinds of art, some framed, some just tacked up sketches. She glanced in the kitchen. A single counter and the bottle of red with maybe half a glass left. She marked it for the sweepers. More wine, some cheese, some yogurt, some energy drinks in a refrigerator that looked as if it had done duty for a couple decades. An old AC, and she checked for the last programmed. No dishes in the sink. She circled out and paused by the open door of a home office, doubling as a guest room. Neat, uncluttered, colorful, Eve noted, with the bed made, the pillows plumped. Someone, maybe the victim, had painted a mural on one wall, a street scene of sidewalk artists at their easels, cars blurring by. She flagged the mini data and communication unit on the table under the window for EDD before continuing on. The bathroom, clean again, simple. She opened the door of the mirrored cabinet over the sink to find some over-the-counter meds, organized by type. She took a moment to check the drawers and cabinet of the vanity before joining Peabody in the main bedroom. Peabody stood, hands on hips, frowning at the room. Two stands flanked the unmade bed, with a lamp and a print dust-coated wine glass on each. The single horizontal window had a privacy screen, unengaged. Peabody turned. I wanted you to see it before I bagged the glasses. Prints on both. The Vicks on the one on the right of the bed. The ones on the left aren't in the system. The lab's gonna find DNA on the glasses and these sheets. Yeah, that's not sleep mode. Did you check the drawers and the stands? A tablet, her link, and a sketch pad and pencils in a case in the one on the right. Nothing on the left. No calls, texts, incoming or outgoing on the link since mid-afternoon. Then just a text. I recorded the number, registered to a Gwendolyn Huffman. What did it say? Just, I'm looking forward to our sitting. The victim texted back she was too, and the texter said she'd see her soon and wouldn't come empty-handed. No time stated. Bag it for EDD. No condoms, no sex toys, Eve added. Not here, not in the bathroom. Closet? Just clothes, shoes, a couple of handbags, one day, one evening. Two rolly bags, the small inside the large. She wasn't a clothes horse, Peabody added, as Eve walked to the closet to look herself. But you can see she organized what she had by type. Work clothes, street clothes, one basic black dress, a couple of what I'd call fun night out outfits. Shoes the same way. She's got underwear, sleep clothes, workout gear, and that sort of thing in the dresser, organized by type again. One small drawer for jewelry, costume, arty, fun stuff. Everything's tidy, Dallas, and nothing looks as if anyone went through it looking for anything. No, not here, not anywhere else.
It bugs me.
Yeah, it did, Eve thought, but turned. Speak. Okay, so you look around the place. Her studio upstairs, the living space down here, and everything's clean, really neat and tidy. Except for the art on the walls, she was a serious minimalist and clearly liked everything clean and in its place. Agreed. No discarded shirt tossed on the little chair over there, no shoes kicked off anywhere to be put back on or put away later. No dirty dishes, except those glasses, Eve added. The spread things folded on top of the bench at the foot of the bed, but the sheets are tangled, half kicked off. Not sleep mode, sex mode. Maybe I can see leaving the bed messy. She's gonna smooth it out before coming back to sleep. That's a little stretch, considering how, you know, precise she was in her living style. But I don't see her leaving those used wine glasses. She used the kitchen AC at 1810 last night to order up a single serving of chicken and rice with a side of Brussels sprouts. Those dishes, and the ones from what she ordered for breakfast yesterday at 0820, lunch at 1335, are in the dishwasher, clean. She programmed it to run at 1828. So maybe she didn't feel like emptying it so she could load the wine glasses, but I don't see her leaving them in here. Doesn't fit the pattern, Eve agreed. She's having wine and sex with somebody, and all signs say consensual. But somewhere along the line, there's an argument. Serious enough for the victim to get up, throw on some work clothes, and not follow pattern by tidying up. She's like, I'm not doing this again. We're done. Get dressed, get out. I'm going to work. Following that line, Eve said, the dumped lover doesn't want it to be done, doesn't want to get out, and concludes the fight by bashing the victim with a mallet. Crime of passion, Peabody concluded. I'll show you who's done, bitch. Decent probability on all of that. The morgue and the sweepers are on the way. Let's have a look at the entrance door and flag the sheets. The sweepers can take them, the glasses, and the rest. They're gonna find DNA, Peabody predicted. But if the prints aren't on file... DNA being on file for the as-yet unidentified lover is less likely, Eve finished, as she opened the front door, hunkered down. She put on micro-goggles to study the lock, the key card swipe. Cheap crap, she muttered, but no sign I can see of tampering. Let's have EDD come in, check it, and see if they can tell how many times it was accessed yesterday. They can check the main door downstairs, too. Possibility. One lover storms out. Fuck you, Ariel. She's upstairs, music on, working. Second lover comes in. Hard to square someone without any sex toys or basic protection, juggling a couple of bed partners, but maybe. Second lover sees bed, wine glasses. Why, that bitch. Walks up, bashes her. That'll teach you to cheat on me. Being tidy and organized doesn't mean she wasn't a bitch, and one tangling sheets with multiples. Even so, Peabody sighed. Too bad if she turns out to be a cheater, because I really like her work. When she heard the steps clanging, Eve replaced the goggles in her field kit. That should be the morgue or the sweepers. Either way, Let's get them started, then go down and talk to the neighbor. She might know who the Vic liked to tangle sheets with. 2. Tall, slender, and visibly distressed, Hetty Brownstone let them into an apartment that smelled of vanilla from a candle burning on the ledge over a small electric fireplace. Unlike Bird's space, this one didn't come within a mile of minimalistic. Toys jumbled from a trio of stacked tubes in one corner, and pillows forested the couch. A kind of cubby tree inside the entrance held kid-size and a few adult-size shoes, boots, jackets, hats. Dust catchers abounded.
Is it true? There isn't a mistake. About Ariel?
No, ma'am. Her eyes teared up, but she shook her head, gestured.
Please, sit down. I haven't been to the market. I was going to go after getting my daughter to school, but I have some tea and some juice tubes.
We're fine, Eve told her.
Can you tell me what happened? It's awful not knowing what happened. And right upstairs from where my little girl sleeps.
We're investigating. Brownstone dropped down in a chair, grabbed the pillow tucked in behind her, and hugged it.
The officers I talked to didn't say, but I got the impression it wasn't an accident.
No, ma'am, it wasn't an accident. Now she squeezed her eyes shut.
She was so blasé about security. The landlord's useless when it comes to security, to improvement. Even repairs take forever. I put the camera and security locks on the apartment myself, and I can tell you I've learned how to do some basic plumbing. Actually, Ariel showed me how to change a washer and clean out a drain. That's how we got to know each other.
How well did you know each other?
We're the only tenants, both women. Both single, but she's very private. And as a single mother, a working one, I'm insanely busy most of the time. We're friendly, but we didn't, she corrected, really socialize or hang together. I teach dance 6 days a week, and I have Tasha. My socializing consists of play dates, trips to the park, kid vids. Ariel teaches art, and works hard and seriously at her own.
You had access to her unit?
Yes. Ariel had a cat, Rodan. She sometimes travels to art festivals, and she asked if I'd look after Rodan, go up, make sure he had food and water, give him a little company whenever she was away. He died last winter. I completely forgot to give her the key card back. And she never asked, so it slipped my mind. I gave it to the police.
Yes, we have it.
Can you tell us about your evening? Oh, sure. She pushed both hands through a wild mass of curly black hair. Like I told the other officers, after I picked up Tasha from school, we came home. I fixed her a snack, and she took a nap while I taught a class in my studio across the hall. I use a monitor so I can see and hear her if she wakes up. The security on the front is worthless, in my opinion, but I can't afford to fix it myself. I keep the apartment locked if she's sleeping and I'm teaching, but I have the monitor.
You know she's safe, Peabody put in.
Yes.
Brownstone's hand fluttered up to the top button of her shirt, twisted at it.
I don't want you to think I neglect her. It's just the two of us. Her father hasn't been in the picture since before she was born. His choice. I filed for professional mother status for the first 6 months, but...
You need to work, Eve said.
I do. I want her to know I'm supporting us, using what I have to teach. Anyway, we have a routine, and she generally conks during the 3 o'clock class. Then we bring some of her toys over so she can play during the next class. After that, there's dinner and a walk to the park if the weather's good or whatever we're up for. Then I have an 8 o'clock, the 13 to 17-year-old students. Tasha likes to dance with the kids, and they don't mind. After that, I lock up, put her to bed. Sometimes that's quick and easy, sometimes not. She smiled a little. Last night was quick and easy, so I had her down for the count about 9:15, took a shower. I had some wine and started nodding off in front of the screen, so I went to bed. Did you hear anything from upstairs? Hear anyone come in or go out of the building? The stairs are loud, Eve pointed out. Tell me about it. I invested in soundproofing for that exact reason. Do either of you have kids?
No.
Well, let me tell you, when you've walked the floor with a teething baby, finally get her to sleep, and somebody comes clanging up the damn stairs and wakes her up, you want to murder them. She jerked back. I didn't actually mean...
We get it, Peabody assured her.
The landlord wouldn't spring for soundproofing, but told me if I wanted to spend the money on it, go ahead. Actually, my parents paid for it. They live upstate.
What do you know about Ms. Bird's friends? Her romantic relationships?
Oh, not much, if anything. I know she had students on Tuesday and Wednesday evenings and every other Saturday afternoon. If I had a class or was going in or out of the building, I'd see them coming in. She never talked to me about anyone she was seeing. Again, she shook her head. I lit that candle for her. Silly, I guess, but I wanted to... If I'd made more time, put more effort into getting to know her, I might be able to help now.
You have helped, Peabody told her.
Part of me wants to shut everything down and run back upstate. I've lived in the city since I was 17 and had a chance to study with the company. I had dreams of being a prima ballerina. I made it to principal, she said with a smile. And then there was Tasha. I don't regret for a single second choosing her over that dream. She is the dream. And this is the first time I've even thought about leaving. Can't do it. She lifted her hands, let them fall. We've made our life here, and it's a good one. But I hope to God you find who did this to Ariel, not only so I can sleep at night, but because she didn't deserve this. What I knew of her was she was a good person, a talented artist, and a considerate neighbor. Outside, as they walked back to the car, Peabody slipped her hands into her pretty pink coat because, to her thinking, it made it more of a stroll.
Parenting's hard, she commented. Single parenting without the other parent involved has to be brutal.
But that was a happy apartment. You could feel it.
It'll be happier when we find out who killed their neighbor.
Yeah, there's that.
What do we know, Peabody?
Dead woman, attacked from behind, who, by all appearances, had wine and sex prior to the attack. EDD will confirm if the lock was compromised, as the visual exam leans no.
They replaced the field kits, got back in the car.
We know the TOD, the probable COD. We know because Brownstone comes off honest and credible, the Vic was private about her private life, serious about her work, supplemented her income by teaching 2 or 3 times a week, and was careless with her security.
We know, Eve added, that the Vic's lover or lovers was or were discreet enough, Brownstone can't confirm she had any. Potentially one or more of her students. Stay after class, have a roll, head out. She'll have the schedule and a list of students on her comp. Have EDD copy us there.
As she drove, Eve called in for the name of the 911 caller and a copy of the recording. Gwendolyn Huffman. The same person who texted her yesterday afternoon. Considering, Eve tapped her fingers on the wheel. Isn't that handy? Let's hear the call. 911, what is your emergency?
Oh God, oh God, she's dead. She's dead. There was blood. Ariel, it's Ariel. You need to help. Send help.
Over the calm, clear voice of the 911 operator, the hysteria rose only higher as the caller spewed out the address.
Hurry, hurry, please hurry. God, God, I'm going to be sick.
The transmission ended. Never gave her name, Eve said. They got it from the link number. She sounded hysterical start to finish. If she actually saw the body in the West Village, dropped the morning takeout, then went all the way home to the Upper East Side, she had time to bank that down a little. And if she didn't see the body, how the hell did she know? Let's see if she's taken the time to work out the answers. The building on the Upper East Side rose high and sleek, steel and glass, with a curve of generous terraces on the top floors. On the street, two doormen in silver-trimmed black flanked the wide glass entrance. Neither of them looked pleased to see Eve's deceptively unstylish DLE pulled to the curb. As the one on the left approached, Eve got out of the car, flipped up her badge. Leave it where I put it. Ma'am, she jabbed a finger at him, then at her badge. Does this say ma'am? No, it does not. It says lieutenant. It says NYPSD. Leave my ride where I put it. She strode past him across the sidewalk and through the glass that whisked open when she approached and made her wonder why the hell they needed doormen. They walked into what Eve thought of as obsessive elegance. Gold and silver abounded, with some royal blue tossed in, with a few cushy club chairs. Gold chandeliers dripped light. Slim silver urns displayed an arrangement of twisted, gold-flecked branches. The air, hushed and fragrant, whispered discreetly of wealth and privilege. Two clerks in royal blue suits manned a curved mirrored counter. One continued to work diligently on her comp. The other tossed his best professional smile at Eve. Good morning and welcome to House Royale. How may I assist you today? Maybe it was petty, but Eve felt just a tiny bump of satisfaction when she held up her badge and watched that smile drop away. We're here to speak to Gwendolyn Huffman. Felicity? He looked over at his companion, who'd stopped working to fold her hands on the counter. Verify their IDs, Jonathan. Oh, yes, of course. If I could scan your badges, please. After he rooted up a scanner, verified, Felicity nodded. We cleared two officers about a half hour ago. Clearance was delayed as Ms. Huffman had a do not disturb on her unit. Ms. Huffman's fiancé arrived about 15 minutes before we put through clearance. As Ms. Huffman had updated her DND to exclude him, Mr. Kane went straight up. So you kept cops cooling heels, but let the fiancé go up? Felicity remained placid. I certainly apologize, Lieutenant. However, in lieu of a warrant or a verified emergency, we're obliged to honor a resident's DND. What time did you come on the desk? Eve asked her. 8:30 a.m. As I told the officers, I haven't seen Ms. Huffman this morning. We'll need a copy of the security feed for the last 24. Eve paused, made it significant. I can get a warrant. That won't be necessary. We're more than willing to cooperate, however we're able. Jonathan,
Go to security and obtain what the lieutenant requested. Lobby, Eve said. Elevators, Huffman's floor. He all but popped up. I'll get it right away. We'll pick it up on our way out, Eve told Felicity. Clear us up.
You're cleared. Miss Huffman is 4800. 48th floor, east.
Thanks. Eve walked to the elevators with Peabody. 2 gold for west, 2 silver for east. Here's a thought. Eve stepped into the car with its gold-veined, silvery mirrored walls. Huffman's back here when she made the 911 call. It came in at the same time Felicity came on the desk. So Huffman was upstairs, here. She puts on the DND and buys time. She had to know cops would come, Peabody concurred. Unless she's an idiot, yeah. Pulls in the fiancé for a little support. Maybe runs the story by him. So far, she's not making my wit of the week list. The desk said they cleared the fiancé up so he doesn't live with her. She goes all the way downtown and early. Stops for coffee and muffins for 2. Why? The text said a sitting. Yeah. No names on the texts either. No chatty details. So she heads downtown very early in the morning. Either the door to the Vic's place wasn't secured, or Huffman has access. If she has access, why? Goes in, goes up, drops the takeout, and doesn't just leave. She comes all the way back here before she calls it in. Why? Eve stepped out into a wide hallway with silver carpet. Let's see how she answers. Apartment 4800 boasted double doors, a palm plate, security cam, and double police locks. Eve pressed the buzzer. The resident is not receiving visitors at this time, the computer began. Please, Lieutenant Dallas, Detective Peabody, NYPSD. She held up her badge for the scanner. After a brief hesitation, a scan, the computer advised, "Please wait." A moment later, the right door opened. She judged the man to be in his mid-30s, with the sun-streaked blonde hair, golden tan, and rugged good looks that said he liked to spend his free time hiking or sailing or playing tennis or some other outdoorsy thing. At the moment, he wore a 3-piece navy pinstripe suit and a perfectly knotted gray and navy tie. Lieutenant, detective. He nodded briefly, his eyes, nearly the same color as his suit, sober. Please come in. I'm Merritt Kane, Ms. Huffman's fiancé. He led them through a small foyer flanked by potted trees with little oranges hanging from the branches and into a wide living area. If the lobby struck Eve as obsessive elegance, this struck her as studied elegance. Everything perfect and perfectly matched, she thought. The soft colors and gentle curves of the furnishings, the huge antique rug, perfectly faded, the quiet art, all landscapes or still lifes, interspersed with mirrors of varying shapes. The scent of roses and lilies in crystal vases, and the perfection of the view of the river outside the wall of glass. The generous terrace offered a little outdoor living with its glass table, cushy chairs, and potted flowers. It all suited the woman curled in the corner of the pale blue sofa. Eve judged her a solid decade younger than the fiancé. Young enough, she thought, to do without facial enhancement, or expert enough with them to make it appear she had. She pulled her blonde hair back in a tail so her classic oval of a face was unframed. Her eyes, a soft blue like the sofa, showed signs of weeping. delicately. She wore white pants in a fluid material and a flowing white shirt. Everything about her read fragile. The two uniforms rose from their chairs. Each had coffee but set the cups down. "Detective, take the officers to the foyer, get their reports. We've got this from here," she said to them. "Ms. Huffman, I'm Lieutenant Dallas."
"I know."
Her voice wavered.
"Merritt and I saw the vid, the ICOV agenda. I can't believe this is happening."
She reached out for Merritt's hand.
I told the officers, was telling them what happened. Except I don't know what happened. I just don't know."
"It's all right, Gwen." Merritt sat beside her, kept her hand in his. Her left one boasted a chunky square-cut diamond. "It's going to be all right." Ruggedly handsome, meet delicate beauty, Eve thought. A perfect match. He looked back at Eve. "Please sit, Lieutenant. Can we offer you something?" "Just answers," she said, and sat. "Before you start, I'm also Gwen's legal representative." "You're a lawyer, Mr. Kane?" "Yes, with Kane, Boswell, and Kane. While Gwen wants to help your investigation in any way she can, you understand she's had a shock." "What kind of a shock have you had, Ms. Huffman?"
I found Ariel. She was..."
Gwen turned her face into Merritt's shoulder.
"So much blood."
"You were in her apartment?"
"Yes, this morning."
"What time?"
"Early. I'm not sure, but it had to be about 7:30. A little before? I'm not sure."
"How did you get into the apartment?" Gwen turned her face back toward Eve, but left her head on Merritt's shoulder.
"The door was open a little. I could hear the music. She likes music on when she works, so I just went inside. I called up to let her know, then I started to go up to her studio. I'd brought coffee and muffins from this place she likes. I was telling her that. I've got lattes and cranberry muffins. I think I said something about being a little early. Maybe how she shouldn't leave her door unlatched. Then, when I went up, I saw her on the floor and all the blood. I saw her face, her eyes. I think I screamed. I don't know. I couldn't breathe. I felt sick and dizzy and terrified. I ran out. Oh, Merritt, I shouldn't have run away like that."
"You were in shock. Did you touch anything?"
"I don't know. The door? The railing? I don't know."
"How did you get back here?"
"I got a cab somewhere. I don't even know. I ran. I walked. I felt outside myself."
She pressed her hand with its dazzling diamond to her heart.
"It didn't seem real. It couldn't be real."
Eve gestured to another chair when Peabody came back in. "How long have you known Ms. Bird?"
"We met last fall. September, I think. It must have been September because Merritt was on a business trip. I went to an art opening downtown. Ariel was one of the featured artists. I liked her work so much."
A single tear slid rather beautifully down Gwen's cheek.
"I bought one of her pieces, and we talked. We just hit it off. I admired her fierce dedication to her art, but she also had a breezy side, if you know what I mean. We became friendly."
"Friendly enough for you to drop by her apartment at 7:30 in the morning?"
"I was early, as I said. I was supposed to be there at 8, but I was excited. I'd commissioned her to do a piece in marble for Merritt, for a wedding gift. I was going to do a sitting."
Did she often leave her door unsecured?
I don't know. I didn't go to her place that often. We'd usually meet for drinks, or to browse a gallery, have some lunch. Of course, I'd been to her place, seen her workspace, but I don't recall her door being unlatched before. She could be careless, Gwen added. When her mind was in her work, she could be careless.
All right. You were friends. You met her other friends.
Not really. It's not that she's an unfriendly person, but she didn't socialize much.
What about romantic partners?
She never mentioned anyone specifically. I used to tell her Merritt had an adorable cousin and I could fix her up.
She smiled a little now when she looked at her fiancé,
Henry. But she'd had a bad breakup a couple of years ago and said she wanted to concentrate on her work. Romance could wait.
Did she mention the name of the ex?
No.
Okay, why don't you tell us about your evening? Those soft and teary blue eyes widened.
My evening?
Where you had dinner, what time, with whom?
I don't understand.
Once again, she looked at Merritt. You've established time of death, he said. We have. I'd like to get this out of the way. Let Ms. Huffman have some quiet and some privacy.
Do they think I could do that to her?
Eyes wide, lips trembling, she clutched at Merritt.
To anyone?
Eve shot Peabody a glance, so her partner leaned in, all understanding. Ms. Huffman, this is such a difficult time for you. You suffered a shock and a loss. Everything you tell us helps us find out what happened to your friend, who hurt your friend. Maybe you talked to her last evening?
No, I... Did I? No. We texted. That's right, in the afternoon. I texted her to confirm the sitting, and she texted back that she was looking forward to it. I was meeting with our wedding planner, Marjorie. Merritt and I are getting married in July.
Congratulations, Peabody added a smile.
I came home after. Merritt's preparing for a court case, so he'd be working late. I got restless. It was such a beautiful day. I went out for a walk, some window shopping. I guess about 6? 6 or 6:30? I'm not sure. I ended up walking to the park. I'm not sure what time I got back here. 8? 9? Then I had a salad, a glass of wine.
2, she corrected,
and worked on some of the things Marjorie and I had discussed. Between the wine and the long walk, I was in bed and asleep by 11.
Did you meet anyone on your walk? Buy anything while you window shopped? Eve asked.
No. Oh, Merritt and I texted, what, about 9:30?
About. I texted Gwen to let her know we were ordering in more food and we'd probably be at prep for another 2 or 3 hours. Since we were taking a break, we texted back and forth for a few minutes. Ms. Huffman, given this morning's timeline, you didn't call 911 for approximately 60 minutes after you found Ms. Bird.
I know. I'm sorry. So sorry. I've never in my life seen... I didn't start to think straight until I was back home, and even then it hit me. I'd left her there. Just left her. I started to take a pill, a sleep aid. I can hardly believe I nearly took a sleep aid so I could just make it all go away. I started shaking all over again, and I called the police, but I couldn't stop shaking.
You put a do not disturb on your room and links.
Yes, when I was going to take the pill. I nearly took it again after I called, but I just drank a soother, and I finally realized the police would need to talk to me, and I wanted Merritt. I wanted merit.
She began to cry slow, graceful tears as she huddled against him.
I should have stayed with her.
With pretty tears sliding, she turned her face up to his.
I should have stayed with Ariel and talked to the police there. I'll be ashamed I didn't for the rest of my life.
Don't blame yourself. He brushed his lips on her forehead. I'd appreciate if we could call this now, Lieutenant, Detective. She's had more than enough. We appreciate your cooperation, Eve said as she rose, and we're sorry for your loss. We'll see ourselves out. On the walk to the elevator, Eve asked, anything we didn't cover from the uniforms? Not really. They'd just gotten started. They said there was some stonewalling, not clearing them up because of the DND, waiting for her legal rep, then some crying and soothing to get through. They stepped into the elevator, started down. They'd started to establish the relationship, the basic timeline, then we got there. Okay. They didn't get deep enough into the initial interview to see the big gaping holes in her story. They didn't mention it, Peabody replied. I guess I'm going to risk wrath and say I felt some of her version had wobbles, and I always suspect anyone who can cry and look gorgeous doing it, but that may be envy. But I didn't see the big gaping holes. Wait for them. Eve headed straight to the lobby desk. Before she could ask, Felicity gave her a packet, sealed and labeled. The copy you requested, Lieutenant. If we can be of any further assistance, you can. How long has Ms. Huffman lived here?
For nearly 4 years, if memory serves.
Does your memory include an approximation of how long she's been seeing Mr. Kane?
An approximation would be the best I can offer.